London residents, 104.4, Max and Stacy, bringing it all to you. What's happening, Stacy?
Max Kaiser.
Yeah.
We're also simultaneously recording this on video.
Yeah.
We're hoping this experiment works. We're doing this on our own, hijacking a studio, a live global news studio here on the weekend. Hopefully they won't come in and have to record something new. But...
Yeah, it's like Max and Stacy unplugged.
Max and Stacy out of control. Max and Stacy trying to innovate.
Well, it struck me that folks might want to watch a YouTube version of this show because it goes out on Residence 104.4. We've been doing that show for 5 years. And, of course, the people in London who listen to this show on Residence have gotten used to the idea that we've been ahead of the curve and breaking financial news for years now. And we got people in London buying gold and it was £200 an ounce. And now it's around £550 an ounce.
And I think you'll make that almost 900.
I mean, 900 pounds an ounce. And so, you know, we're helping folks, especially those in Shoreditch, which is a town area in London. It used to be really kind of trendy back in the 90s, I guess, when a lot more of the bond-smoking, Oasis-listening club-goers were kind of in that area. Now, then it went through a gentrification, ultra-gentrification phase. Now, like other city centers around the world, it's degrading again because of the austerity measures. So maybe this is great for Shoreditch.
Well, I think all the people who used to live in Shoreditch have come out of the woodwork, and I did see a few of our listeners storming Tory headquarters at Milbank Tower in the past week once the Tories and Lib Dems, I guess, were decided that they were going to triple the top-up fees, as you predicted right here on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Yeah, that's one of the things we did talk about. When they introduced the what they called quaintly the top-up fee, as if, oh, it's just a rounding error. We just need a few extra P, you know, to pay the postage on the letters we'll be sending out to folks, informing them of all the great opportunities they have with the university system here in the UK. You know, this was obviously a Trojan horse in that they would just up this every year and they're doing it again. Now it's at a level that's over the very short period of time, shocking. And people who thought that they could afford to go to university now can't afford to go to university without taking on massive debts. And, of course, you can't take on debts in this economy that's shrinking and austerity's biting. And the austerity measures, of course, are asymmetric. You know, the people who did not cause the banking scandals to begin with are taking the brunt. And the folks that did cause these banking scandals are being left to govern themselves on their own volition. You know, the government is saying, oh, well, we recommend that you don't commit fraud anymore, and please don't commit so much fraud, and we take your word for it. But everybody else now has to suffer true austerity measures and cutting back on services. And, you know, in my opinion, this is a repudiation of Thatcher economics going back to the 80s, because her whole idea of neoliberalization, that close all the mines, close the coal mines, get rid of the unions, and financialize the economy, securitize the economy. The Big Bang in the city of London in 1987, happened to be a visitor in London at that time. And I went to the wine bar for the first time, and I think I was in the Soho or something. It was all very exotic and interesting. But it is a complete failure. It's a round trip to nowhere. It hasn't worked. I mean, Britain would love to have those coal mines operating right now. The price of coal is skyrocketing. They blew through their North Sea oil reserves. They're going to be energy importing in a huge way at the same time that the price of energy is skyrocketing. And the Thatcher is a bonehead. She totally bankrupted the country.
Yeah, but you're just talking about energy there, coal and oil. There are other things like car manufacturing and manufacturing in general. And that's all left the country as well. The only thing remaining, the two big corporations, are, of course, BP and Rolls-Royce. And, of course, Rolls-Royce is in the news in the last week or two as their engines explode over various parts of the world.
Yeah, the manufacturing base got gutted, and they sent all these things overseas. The idea being that we'll keep innovation, and we'll keep all the financial services, and we'll have the hedge funds. and we'll be the financial capital of the world with New York, and we don't need the manufacturing jobs, and we'll just grow millions of yuppies here in the UK, and they'll live these exalted lifestyles based on consumption that they can't pay for, watch EastEnders at night, and blow through bonbons at $50 a clip, and nobody will ever have to pay for any of these excesses. And of course, this is now proven to be fiction. It's not sustainable. Dave Cameron, the suppository salesman from Notting Hill, is out there imposing austerity measures. And he's brought back, and his to help him, are legions of toffs. You know, I was reading in the Financial Times today that Cameron's brought back the toff because, you know, heaven forbid in the UK we have politicians like Deputy Prime Minister under Blair, two jabs, two jags.
Lord Prescott, he is now.
Lord Prescott, yeah. You know, he was a disgrace. You know, we could never, we want people, you know, back to the blue bloods, back to the toffs, back to the wankers.
Yeah, well, now we have two jabs is back, and he's a lord now. So what does that tell you?
Well, it's just, it's unfortunate, really, because Tony Blair, like Bush and like Clinton, and like Obama, they evolved their political species, evolved during the past 20 years to be a new political animals. You know, they're like cancer. I mean, cancer is a disease famously that can mutate faster than anyone can figure out how to solve it. And politicians like Obama is the latest incarnation of this rapidly mutating political farce that's in bed with the corporations and the bankers. But, you know, to hear him campaign back a couple of years ago, you would think that the guy actually had a soul, that he actually cared about people in some way. And now we know that's a farce, that he's just a robot up there pulling the strings for the bankers and the Koch brothers and all the other industrial maggots. You know, we don't call them magnates anymore. These are industrial maggots, and they're just infecting the economy in ways that are irreparable. You know, Cameron, no austerity measure is not going to work. So you get 50,000 students down there storming Tory headquarters looking for Cameron, looking for Zach. Where's Zach?
Oh, you had to bring him up. Now, there's another big viral sort of stampede going on, and that's against silver. That's something you launched on the Alex Jones show, that you came up with this idea while live on air, of basically Google bombing the J.P. Morgan, what is it? Crash J.P. Morgan, buy
crash
silver.
J.P. Morgan, buy silver, yeah.
And how would buying silver crash J.P. Morgan?
Well, I think this is a really fascinating story, really, because what I said on the Alex Jones show last week, and by the way, you know, we sent an email over to Alex Jones yesterday. We wanted to be on the Kaiser Report Monday. But, you know, he shuts down operations for the weekend on Friday, so we missed him. And this show goes out on a Saturday. If anybody in Austin or anyone who's affiliated with Alex Jones can get a message to him or Matt, his lieutenant.
Well, they do a show on Sundays, so they'll be there on Sunday.
Okay. Then, yeah, we got to get him on Monday. But the way this all went down is that, you know, it's not a new concept. I mean, usually I'd like to take credit for, you know, everything, including things that I had nothing to do with. But in this case, to be fair, this is based on a lot of information and ideas that have been circulating around, because people have for years talked about the fact that the COMEX is selling silver and gold that they don't have in their warehouse. They're naked short selling. And that J.P. Morgan, when they inherited that Bear Stearns position, they inherited something like 30,000 naked shorts or contracts that were part of an overall government scheme to keep the price of silver and gold low, because, you know, they are the antithesis to the fiat paper currency system. And so people have talked about the fact that, well, for every dollar of price appreciation you see in silver, it could potentially expose on J.P. Morgan's balance sheet how much in liability. Somebody wrote a report saying if silver gets to $50, then J.P. Morgan's got $4 billion in potential liability from all the shorts they have on silver. And then to cover those shorts, they've got to go into the market to buy in the open market, and that just exacerbates the problem. You have a short squeeze. So this has been known, and Michael Krieger, who's a big wheel over there at ZeroHedge.com, we've interviewed him on our Kaiser Report show, and great writer, he's got great stuff. He's been talking about this idea about the silver stranglehold potentially liability over at JP Morgan. So when I was on the Alex Jones show, I was listening to Alex Jones talk about the fact that the TSA scandal, what's TSA stand for? Transportation something or other authority. They're the people at the airports who frisk you on your way to the airplane to make sure you're not carrying any loaded breasts or some kind of wooden legs stuffed with C4 to commit some act of vandalism. And they've gotten out of control. So they are now, as Lou Rockwell wrote a piece today called TSA Rapists, something along those lines. I mean, they really, this is becoming like ultra-violent scene from Clockwork Orange, that movie, where you have these cops and thugs fused together into these gangs who have the authority of cops, and they rape people, and they say they're doing their duty to protect you. And it's become, insane. So he says on Alex Jones, of course, he talks about these Google bombs and how he gets his listeners to search certain terms relating especially to this TSA scandal. And this forces the term TSA scandal up to the top of the Google search algorithm because, it's basically hacking that algorithm, enforcing the search results to go to where, you're managing how the flow of information is flowing through the cyberspace. And as a result, because there's so much traffic on these search terms, you have folks like Glenn Beck or Matt Drudge who are purely the product of search results driven news gathering and dissemination. They then pick up on this and they report. So they echo what Alex Jones is doing. So Alex Jones is now the de facto a news desk for all these outlets around the world because of his listeners that are changing the direction of the search on Google, and Google is the primary search engine used by the globe to inform themselves, and he's basically hacked into it using his listeners. So he's winning the information war. So when I was on his show and I said, why don't you do a Google bomb for crash JP Morgan, buy silver? And this immediately got picked up by lots of different outlets, and people are running with this ball, and it's building a momentum. So on paper, the economics of it makes sense, and it's something that there's a visceral reaction out there because we immediately got YouTubes from people sending in YouTubes talking about they just went out and bought more silver as a way to punish JP Morgan. So here you have a way for $25 or $50 to buy 1 or 2 ounces of silver. Take physical delivery. That's the key. Physical delivery. Take that silver off the market, forcing these silver exchanges to have to cover their shorts. And by simply buying the silver, you're putting JP Morgan into monetary cardiac arrest, and potentially put them out of business. And this is what people are responding to. Here's a direct action that the silver bullets that they can fire. By effectively and put JP Morgan out of business. And this is needs to be done because JP Morgan is the world's most horrifying, terrifying global terrorist.
Well, actually, we got a great video from Stuart's Bushcraft blog from the UK. This is UK viewer who really jumped on this story big time. He bought 30 silver coins and 2 kilo bars.
Yeah.
Silver future contracts today,
That
dollar,
was
silver
pretty
for.
impressive.
Now,
so
this is a great video because
so we're
you
going to
start
take you
watching the
now.
video, and this guy
Today I went out and
who's
bought
in the sun in front of his
30
sitting in front
silver
of his
bullets,
house maybe there, and he's talking
30
about
silver
you
nails.
can see it behind us if you're watching this on YouTube, by the way.
Yeah, you see this, and you're watching this, and you're like, oh yeah, this guy seems kind of
I couldn't just
interesting,
stop
a
there,
very
you see.
amusing chap. Hello,
As
how
a
are you?
result, went
And
on a
then
bit of
the
a roll.
big reveal, he whips
Oh,
out
sorry,
30
JP
silver
Morgan.
coins and 2 kilo bars,
I had to
and
get
you're like,
2 kilos
wow,
as well. Yeah,
that's
I'm really
great,
sorry. It was nice
and
knowing you.
it's totally
So
inspiring. As a matter of
this
fact, with all the
campaign
silver
goes
and gold that
viral.
I own, and
He'll
I
finish you
own,
through.
to put it euphemistically, I don't know, we can't curse on this show, but I own, a substantial amount of this stuff. I was inspired to go buy more. That's the beautiful thing about it. People are inspiring each other to go the extra distance, spend the extra $20, $50, buy another couple of ounces, because at the end of this campaign is a dead JP Morgan on the ground, gasping for life with a silver spike jamming through their heart.
Well, of course, course, if we put J.P. Morgan out of business, you know who else will lose a job and $2 million of income a year? Yes, that's Tony Blair, who is an advisor to J.P. Morgan here in the U.K.
It only gets better.
Started like the day after leaving office, which is remarkable, being paid $2 million a year for some sort of mysterious advisory work he gives to them. Well, and he'll be out of a job.
Yeah. I mean, his job is to be a pimp because he matches his global Rolodex of names and influential people with new clients for J.P. Morgan. I mean, he's a matchmaker. He's a financial pimp. And for that, they pay him £2 million a year. And that's after. What do you think about this scandal now that Bush admits he committed war crimes, but Fox News spins it like, well, war crimes are no longer illegal. Isn't that just like J.P. Morgan saying, well, we committed financial fraud, but I don't know if you noticed, but financial fraud's not illegal anymore?
Well, it's up to the world to enforce it. It is. He has admitted to breaking the law, and the international law, which was mostly created by the U.S. following World War II, is such that it demands the investigation of him. However, you know, international law at the time, before people decided to stop Hitler, you know, it took several countries being invaded and many millions of people killed before people decided, okay, well, we'll go after him. So it depends, you know, most nations and their populations don't seem to care so much about it. If it were Ahmadinejad who just wrote a book saying, yeah, I tortured people, so what? I mean, there would just be people out in the streets protesting, saying, get this, you know, non-white person, get this non-white person. But I don't know. It's just people don't care.
You mentioned Iran, Ahmadinejad, and, of course, last year we had that Green Revolution. And millions of people around the world were Twittering about this, and they changed their Facebook portraits to being like green people and green ribbons and green this and green that. We're going to support this color revolution. And meanwhile, here you have Bush, President of the United States, former president, saying he did nothing better or worse than anything Ahmadinejad or Saddam Hussein was accused of. I don't see any difference. I mean, Saddam Hussein committed war crimes, and so did George Bush. And so, and also another apologist for George Bush, shockingly enough, is this John Stewart, who's last week on various talk shows, including Rachel Maddow, saying, well, I don't put George Bush in the war criminal category, even though he did kill a million people in Iraq, even though he did say water torturing is accessible, you know, perfectly acceptable, breaking international law, even though the Geneva conventions were thrown out the window. Then, you know, here you have John Stewart, who is suddenly completely devoid of credibility, because I think in his case, he just got so bored of doing the comedy show. He wanted to do some serious news. And now he's put his foot into the serious news space. And he looks like an idiot, because you can't be an apologist for a war criminal. And I mean, you can be a satirist and make fun of an alleged war criminal or a war criminal, but you can't pretend to be somewhat newsy. Or have any truthiness, as Stephen Colbert might say, and to defend a war criminal. I mean, no, he's gone now. So he's John Stewart's finished. Everybody move up. Everybody move up. So I see that with this crisis, a lot of people who are in the alternative media space are moving up. Like on this guy who was on the Young Turks. He for years he was doing the Young Turks, like vlogging, gent. I can never remember his name. Now he's doing MSNBC, which is good because the guy is a good talent. You know, people are moving up.
Well, but the other thing about George Bush is it takes that last scene from 3 Days of the Condor to the next step. So here you have Robert Redford, this guy who risks his life to get the truth out. And he's confronted in front of the New York Times building. And Turner, the guy from the CIA, says, he said, how do you know they'll print it?
Yeah.
And Redford says, they'll print it, and starts to walk away. But here we have a situation where they're printing it, these stories, and it's going a next step, is Bush himself is the one printing it.
Right.
But there's no, what makes you think, basically, is how do you know the population will care?
Well, that's the benefit of being a buffoon and a clown. If Bozo the clown comes out and says, I waterboarded people, you think pie in the face, big rubber shoes, and you kind of chuckle about it. If, in fact, you have a serious person coming out and saying they committed waterboarding, then suddenly it's, oh, that's horrible. We have to investigate. And, of course, the New York Times has failed in its duty to be a reporter of news in the public interest and has gone straight down into the toilet in terms of their editorial standard. And we now must rely on folks like WikiLeaks to step in and fill the void, who is actually doing what the New York Times should be doing, investigative journalism. And with WikiLeaks out there now, it's clear. After WikiLeaks comes out, again, John Stewart making his comments, an apologist for George Bush, after the WikiLeaks came out, and I've watched John Stewart often enough to say with confidence that he never mentions WikiLeaks in any of his reporting. That's ridiculous. I mean, that clearly shows he's got an agenda that is skewing way, way far right, far, far right in the U.S.
Going back to the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, there is another possibility as well of how this story has become so big, is that it's been the airline pilots who have really stepped up the fight against it. And it then it moved up to the CEO of British Airways, who, you know, remarkably came out and publicly condemned, you know, and questioned the effectiveness of any of these, you know, just brutal U.S. Interrogation techniques at the border. But I want to say, you know, we get a lot of pilots who write to us, who you also visit our site all the time. And a lot of it has to do with we're on the international television, on RT, which broadcasts in hotel rooms and airports around the world. So we get many, many pilots that listen, and maybe they heard us talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a funny story, isn't it? Because on a Kaiser Report episode a couple of months ago, I looked at the camera and I said, hey, you, walking toward the departure gate. And we got like 50 emails within 2 hours from people who were obviously at the airport, had all the domain names from various airports around the world. And so it shows you that these international television stations, I mean, who would ever read, for example, USA Today? It's a newspaper that people only read because it's given to away to them at the airport. Other than that, would you actually buy a copy of USA Today? I mean, you know, I mean, so there's the whole business, the captive. See, that's another reason why the TSA is doing what the TSA is doing, is that you have a captive audience. People need to get on that airplane, and you already have them lined up to go through these metal detectors. So now how do you leverage that to debase an entire soul of a country? Well, you hire a bunch of thugs to rape people as they're getting on the airplane. And the result, again, getting back to Alex Jones, the question is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first? Was it Alex Jones' Google bomb on the TSA, or was it Matt Drudge and Glenn Beck talking about the TSA scandal? I posit that Alex Jones, who's been laboring in the shadows of mainstream media for years, going all the way back to Waco, is now, in my opinion, this TSA scandal has done for Alex Jones what, you know, the war in Lebanon, Israel's attack of Lebanon recently did to Al Jazeera English. It totally legitimized that network and made it a must-see network. Or going back to the CNN during the first Iraq invasion, of course, was it made that network and blew all the other competition out of the way for the time being. Of course, CNN then relapsed into being a puppet for a bunch of right-wing neocon media schmageggies.
Well, let's move back to the UK, because this is something that could be applied here, including, you know, they took it in a different way when they stormed Tory headquarters. But here's another shocking story. McDonald's and PepsiCo to help write UK health policy. Department of Health is putting fast food companies at the heart of policy on obesity, alcohol, and diet-related disease. The Department of Health is putting the fast food companies, McDonald's and KFC, and processed food and drink manufacturers such as PepsiCo, Kellogg's, Unilever, Mars, and Diageo at the heart of writing government policy on obesity, alcohol, and diet-related disease, The Guardian has learned in an overhaul of public health said by campaign groups to be the equivalent of handing smoking policy over to the tobacco industry, Health Secretary Andrew Lansley has set up 5 responsibility deal networks with business co-chaired by ministers to come up with policies. Some of these are expected to be used in the public health white paper due in the next month.
And what's their justification for this? That nobody knows the food better than the companies who sell the most food. I mean,
there's always that argument of we need to be partners with business. We need to include them. They have human rights, don't they? They have free speech rights and stuff. They need to be part of our policy. Never are the human beings that constitute the population of that particular nation ever consulted.
Well, you know, 2 weeks ago, Vodafone, it was exposed, dodged billions in taxes. And as a result, thousands of people went to Vodafone stores around the country in the UK and shut those stores down. It was like a flash mob technique, heralded as a breakthrough in activism in the UK, civil disobedience. Now, anybody watching this or this story that McDonald's is being paid for, the government's paying them to write your health policy. This is such an obvious transgression and abdication of the government's role as a intermediary force between the rapacious corporate machine and their attack on citizens, that it's beyond laughable. It's beyond sick. You know, the UK public, here's the thing about the UK public. As we've been talking about, if you buy an ounce of silver, you are helping to put JP Morgan out of business. If you simultaneously stop going to McDonald's, you see, this would be the twin campaign. Buy silver, stop going to McDonald's simultaneously, and put 2 companies out of business. You can make money by not going to McDonald's, by selling their stock short. Now, it's a bit more complicated than simply buying silver and watching the silver price quadruple while JP Morgan gets blown out of the water, because in the case of shorting a stock like McDonald's, it requires a little bit more finesse. But technically, you could. And as you don't go to that McDonald's and as you don't give them your money, the revenue shrink, the stock price falls, and the money you use to short that company stock is worth more. Now, if you don't want to bother shorting the stock of McDonald's, simply stop going to McDonald's. The revenues will fall apart, and professional hedge funds will do all the shorting for you. They've got trillions of dollars to look for investment opportunities. They'll put McDonald's out of business for you if you stop going to McDonald's. You'll buy the silver on the same time, which will quadruple in price while JP Morgan's going out of business. So if in fact you want to get rich while simultaneously putting financial terrorists and hamburger terrorists out of business, it's not hard to do. It's within our means to do so.
Well, I want to talk another thing about politicians and how they're just in the pocket of various corporate interests, and they never operate on behalf of the people. Revealed, Lib Dems planned before election to abandon tuition fees pledge. So here's Nick Clegg going around the UK, signing a pledge to vote against any increase in fees. And in fact, he had pledged to scrap university tuition fees. But 2 months before the election, secret documents have emerged that they were already planning on, in the event of a hung parliament where they would have power. They said that they would scrap, that they would not waste political capital defending its manifesto pledge to abolish university tuition fees within 6 years. So they wrote in our tuition fees, on tuition fees, we should seek seek agreement on part-time students and leave the rest. We will have clear yellow water with the other parties on raising the tuition fee cap. So let us not cause ourselves more headaches. So it was totally fake. They were never going to fight against these tuition fee increases.
What is clear yellow water? What's that all about?
A urine stream? You know how these ponces are, these people in public school?
The toffs are always getting naked and riding around on bicycles or talking about clear yellow streams. What is wrong with these Tories? Well, Nick Clegg, I mean, it's a shame, isn't it? He sold out the Lib Dems. And they looked like they were on the path to such greatness based on that Mark Oten scandal.
Well, and even so, a month after the secret document, month after they were already planning to not fight to scrap tuition fees, a month later, Nick Clegg released a YouTube video for the annual National Union of Students Conference on April 13th, in which he pledged to abolish fees within 6 years. He said, quote, "You've got people leaving university with this dead weight of debt, around 24,000 pounds around their neck." Mm-hmm. So he knows it's a dead weight, and therefore he is, you could accuse him of knowingly murdering you with debt, because he knew it was a dead weight, and he's throwing you into the yellow stream of his urine.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, 24,000 pounds, of course, the Americans are laughing because the Americans graduate now with $150,000 in debt if they graduate from one of the Ivy League schools.
Yeah, but these are just from Joe Bag of Donuts universities with 24,000 pounds, that's almost $50,000, and they only introduced tuition fees recently. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, on an apples comparison, it is – commensurate with the strain it's putting on the graduates. And, you know, it's Nick Clegg, you're right. He is premeditated debt assassination of these poor people. And that's a hanging offense. It should be a hanging offense. The Tower of London, it's still there. It's got a good purpose.
Well, I think more importantly, you can know that his plan, he's operating on a Tony Blair sort of policy. So why don't you just buy silver, take down JP Morgan, don't give these guys an escape avenue, because what they're doing is they're operating on behalf of bankers. This is a CV, a resume booster for getting a job with JP Morgan or Goldman Sachs. You put these guys out of business, however, and they won't have a job to go to, and they'll have to actually think about, doing something for the population.
You make a good point in that people who graduate with a lot of debt, they're going to gravitate toward the jobs that pay the most money. Now, right now, the only jobs available are government jobs, and government jobs in defense and military and things like this. So it's a way to get people and recruit them into the positions of the technocracy, which is set up to imply oppression across the citizenship. And you see this also in the poor communities, who they're suffering from debt. And their only way, avenue out of this, is to join the military. So it's just another extension of this mentality. If you put people into debt, you can manipulate them a lot easier. This is why Ben Franklin, founder of the United States, one of the founders, would often talk about how debt you lose your independence and liberty when you become indebted. And this is a concept you would think Americans would understand, but for somewhere down along the way, they forgot that indebtedness means loss of liberty. Somehow to consume and incur debt became equated with liberty. You know, those credit card companies would always have people shopping and like expressing their individuality and being free to spend whatever they want at any time. They're free. Of course, and people in America equate free with their birthright as Americans. And somehow that in their mind, that meant that, well, let's become a debt slave.
Yeah, and in the UK, by the way, they're also shutting off that avenue of even the poor, joining the military, because, of course, they're cutting their military spend by 10% in real terms.
Yeah, that is interesting the way Cameron is cutting back on military spending. And the U.S., of course, spends $600-700 billion a year on military. They've got to, at some point, cut back on their military. France and the U.K. are not cooperating on military to save money. And the really interesting thing is that today, the World War III, as it's being fought now, is being fought as a currency war. So it's not a ground war. It's not jets. It's not planes. It's not armies. It's currency war. It's the Forex pits. It's derivatives. It's credit default swaps. That's where, as Dr. Michael Hudson spoke about brilliantly on a recent RT interview, you know, it's a currency war. It's a military operation. He said the point of a military operation is going to a foreign country and to take property, take assets. Mm-hmm. And what America is doing is they're artificially suppressing the price of the dollar by this quantitative easing so that they can use the dollar, a weaponized dollar, to go into these countries and buy assets and take over, take control of property. So the goal is the same as any military campaign and occupation, except the weapon being used is finance. Now, why is America spending $600-700 billion a year on military hardware to fight a currency war? You know, this goes back to, you know, 150 years ago, showing up to fight, you know, cannons on the field of battle with your épée and, you know, a knife. You know, it does. You're going to lose.
That's nice. Anybody watching this on YouTube will see Max spewing all over
the place. Those words out. There's literal sputum coming out of my mouth. That's nice. That's really nice.
That's nice.
That's really nice.
Well, I see, you know, speaking of, you know, cuts and austerity measures, I see that the U.S. President's Deficit Commission, of course, which he had, you know, staffed with very right-wing people and a few moderate right-wing people.
Yeah.
And nobody from the liberal or left or progressive side. But their conclusion of how to cut the deficit is to cut tax loopholes for the middle class. So such things as getting rid of the credit for housing, which I'm kind of all for. But there was no discussion about all the tax loopholes for the rich or for corporations. So in the last, you know, you were just talking about Vodafone not paying anything in taxes, but neither have Google.
Right.
So these giant corporations, of course, get to have all of the rights of humans. They've acquired human rights in the U.S. that you cannot offend their, you know, First Amendment rights. But they also have, like, no individual in the U.S. can spend more than $2,300 on donations to political campaigns. But corporations, these are sort of superhumans that get to spend unlimited amounts. But so what do you think of this? Because so they're saying cut all of these loopholes for the middle class. The poor don't pay taxes anyway because they're just too poor. The rich don't pay taxes because they're too rich.
Well, why isn't the ACLU lobbying for individual corporate rights? In other words, if corporations now have the rights of individuals, why can't individuals have the rights of corporations? So as an individual, I want to have equal rights as a corporation. I want to have all the rights as a corporation has. So instead of trying to defang the rights that have been aggregated by corporations at the expense of society, why not to lobby for similar corporate rights to be passed on to individuals? For example, you mentioned Google. Google was able to avoid paying $60 billion, I think it was, in taxes, if that's possible. The numbers, their tax rate, their effective tax rate, let me say this, was down to the 3% range by going through various offshore entities. Now, what good does that do anybody except for the insiders and the shareholders to some degree of Google? I mean, what possible good does this do the American system of democracy, of government? It doesn't do it any good. I mean, why are we holding these guys up? Why does Business Insider have stories about, you know, the, you know, Google geniuses? I mean, it doesn't take a genius to break to avoid paying taxes by means that up until a few years ago were illegal. Just because you can lobby Congress to keep changing the laws to make it easier to not pay taxes doesn't make you a business genius. Just because Goldman Sachs has a computer, high frequency trading algorithmic computer, stealing money from the New York Stock Exchange, it doesn't make them a business genius. If I, you know, hit an old lady with a ball peen hammer and steal her purse, am I going to get my face on Business Insider front page as a business genius? I don't get it. They're not geniuses. They're just thieves.
Well, the other thing that Carl Denninger recommended is that, you know, one of the arguments why nobody will tax the big corporations is because they might leave. They might leave our country. They might flee.
Well, the thing is, they've already left. They all the jobs they shipped overseas. They don't pay taxes. The taxes are all not paying in the U.S. So what's actually left is a phantom, a ghost, a shell. They've already left. The ship has left. I don't get it. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? They've left already.
Well, Carl Denninger recommends calling their bluff and saying, don't let them operate in the U.S. Just don't let them operate. If you know, see if Google can not be allowed to operate in the U.S. If nobody in the U.S. is allowed to access Google.com, then let's see what happens to them.
Yeah, well, let's impose that restriction. I mean, the only thing useful about Google in the short term is the ability for people like Alex Jones to hack the algorithm and to launch Google bombs that are changing the news agenda in the U.S. so that people are focusing on these outrageous scandals like the TSA scandal and the crash J.P. Morgan buy silver campaign.
You know, let's go to MaxKaiser.com because there's a story that I have up, and it's regarding this guy Shimkus, a Republican congressman who is vying to be the head of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. So he would be in charge of things like energy policy, but also climate change policy. Now, he believes that there's no such thing as climate change because, according to the Bible, God promised that he would never destroy the earth again after Noah's flood.
That's right. I read that. Yeah, that's right.
So apparently, you know, there are trillions upon trillions upon trillions of stars in the universe. All of them die, every single one, except for, apparently, according to Shimkus, ours, because the sun cannot die, because if it were to die, the earth would die. So there you go. We're the one exception to the trillions upon trillions of other, you know, evidence out there. Now, one of the things I found, though, was from up until February 2010, there's a chart that shows the trends in non-defense R&D by function. So it goes back to 1953 all the way up to first quarter of 2010. And it's truly amazing because if you read the newspapers, you would assume that there's a lot of money going into energy research and developing alternative energies and all sorts of things. And George Bush told us we need to break our addiction to oil because we were relying on foreigners. The R&D numbers show completely otherwise. This is the green line. That's all the billions going into research and development for energy.
Right.
As you see, it's been declining since the 70s, and it's minuscule and is dwarfed by research and development money into space, and many times dwarfed by research and development growth and money into health. So it looks pretty bogus. Also, any research and development into natural resources and environment has stayed pretty much flat since about 1969, 68.
Right, and of course, who benefits from the health research dollars spent, paid for by the government, or the health companies and the pharmaceutical companies who then use that research to create patents to sell intellectual property tied pills and medications to folks at incredible markups. So the U.S. is paying for the research of the pharmaceutical companies. And this is one of the reasons why. But anyway, getting back to the research, the guy who is putting forward this issue that global warming, AGW, anthropomorphic global warming, is not really in the cards because Noah promised that there wouldn't be another calamity after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, first of all, that guy, whatever his name is, Joe Bag of Donuts.
Shimkus.
Dr. Shimkus. Mr. Shimkus. He's not a religious man. He doesn't believe in the Bible.
He does.
No, but I'm saying that's false because he's abusing the Bible. In other words, he is to the Bible what a TSA agent is to security. I mean, on the surface, you make a case, you say, I believe in the Bible. And the Bible says that such and such is the story. That is the way things are. You then extrapolate these ideas to ad absurdum, to the point of where you're using your fundamentalist interpretation as a bat to smack people around and to subjugate them into tyrannical positions of imprisonment. It's the same thing that the U.S. accuses radical Islamic fundamentalists of doing. It's the same thing that I accuse radical market fundamentalists on Wall Street of doing. Taking a few bits and pieces from a book and concocting it to support a radical vision that has no relation at all from the original text. It's a derivative. It's a biblical derivative of a derivative of derivative. So here you have some Schlipkins nonsensical moron who knows that he can milk the system, milk the Fox News viewer, milk the idiocracy that prevails across the country for a few dollars more to pay for a little bit more of campaign contributions to buy some mistress of his another little bauble so that she doesn't leave him. And the people are being victimized by the stupidity of constantly referring to the Bible in a way out of context that makes no freaking sense to the intent of what the Bible said, to the intent of what the Constitution said, to the intent of what any of these books say. You're misquoting them. And that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but you're confusing this situation as well, because you're putting in a fictional book. You might as well put Alice in Wonderland in there as well, okay? You're saying that this guy is using a literal interpretation of Alice in Wonderland. You know, the Bible is just a story that some dudes wrote over the course of time. You know, it's not a scientific text. It's not a factual-based text. Maybe some of the facts obviously are correct, but it's an allegory. It's a story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the intention of the Bible or any religious text is to present a series of stories that are used as parable, mm-hmm. so that people can have simple people who are uneducated will understand the parable.
Well, everybody pretty much was uneducated. A few people could write Latin or Aramaic at the time,
right.
But these were like oral stories to tell people.
Right, and as such, they need to be dramatic. And there's a story of a big boat, and all the animals go on the boat, and there's a big flood. And if you're illiterate and you're sitting around in between, you know, working in the field, this is an amusing story, and you walk away saying, "Huh, wow, that's an interesting story. I think I'll incorporate that into my rudimentary peasant mentality." Now, what place does this have currently? I mean, it is a book that one can draw interesting parables from, just like any religious text. They're all interesting stories, but to take them as literal truth, yes. I mean, people who go to, this man goes to Disneyland. Does he walk away from Disneyland talking about trying to populate the world with mice that have ears that are in the same shape as Mickey Mouse in Disneyland because the Bible of Walt Disney told him to do so? You know, to extrapolate your views into a single point of idiocy and to have in a position of authority with that point of idiocy is how you end up with a population that'll vote for any frickin' plated jello that puts its name on the ballot.
Okay, but in the last few minutes, I want to talk about, because, you know, obviously Nick Clegg can say one thing. He was promising to cut tuition fees, and in fact, he wasn't ever planning on it. This guy can talk out of his bottom, and he can spew all sorts of things about Noah. And, you know, at the end of the day, show me the money. Show me where the money's going. And this is what I'm trying to show with this. You know, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll be able to see I'm putting up this chart here that one of the primary things we see right now, one of the big themes in the world, is that we are told that several hundred thousand scientists are engaged in an elaborate hoax about convincing you that there's climate change. And they're doing it. Their incentive, according to this theory, is that they're after the dollars that go into research. Now, the evidence, the actual numbers, the dollar amounts that are going into it have not increased at all since the 1960s. So, and the spending on this is absolutely dwarfed. It's only it looks like about 1-2% at most of research and development spend in the U.S. So who are these hundreds of thousands of people concocting an elaborate hoax to get just a little tiny, 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 tiny slice of the pie? It makes no sense. If these guys are really after scamming the population out of research and development dollars, why aren't they going into health instead? It makes no sense. Why aren't there, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Plus, you also see in there that governments are lying to us about energy, and it's a huge lie. So they obviously have a plan. They're not spending on developing anything, but they must have a plan.
Well, it's not about cents. I mean, it's about oil companies hoping to shirk their responsibility of paying the true cost of their business, which is to burn fossil fuels in a way that is killing humanity. That costs a lot of money. They don't pay it. So, and we saw with tobacco. We're seeing it with Monsanto and genetically modified seeds. They hire lobbyists and pundits and military folks to go on TV and to spread disinformation. And this is then picked up on the simplest level for the populist, message purveyors like the Fox News is out there to break it down to like a Noah story, you know? So in other words, the Noah story worked 2,000 years ago for simple people, simple peasants, and it's working today for simple peasants. The people who buy that there's no climate change because Noah said that there wouldn't be any climate change are no different than the peasants from 2,000 years ago. Illiterate, they live in an isolated world. They can't see beyond 200 yards in front of their face. And they are happy to some degree with this, and they have no aspiration to be anything but, indentured servants and peasants. And unfortunately, in the U.S., there's now probably 200 million people like this.
So let's go over to Huffington Post in the last of our few minutes we have remaining. Gloom of night. U.S. Postal Service lost billions in year, despite deep cuts.
Well, this is a farce. You know, the Postal Service in France works brilliantly. It comes two or three times a day. It doesn't cost the average person more than nothing. It costs them nothing, basically, because they realize that the economies of scale for the government to run something that's complicated and boring like the Postal Service is stupid to put private industry to waste their time in something that could be very easily done very cheaply by the government. The fact that the government starved the Postal Service to the point where it doesn't work anymore, with the theory that we're going to let our friends go in there and steal hundreds of billions of dollars and load her up with debt, doesn't prove that the Postal Service doesn't work in the United States. Doesn't prove that Amtrak doesn't work in the United States. Doesn't mean that public schools don't work in the United States. It just means that private businessmen are there loading these functions up with huge amounts of debt, paying themselves extraordinary dividends, and laughing at the American people. Because if you look at the postal services in other countries run by the government, they run fantastically well. The postal service in the UK ran like clockwork. It delivered two times a day for years. Then the business people got in there and decided we can do it better. What they forgot to say is we just want to load up full of debt, steal all the equity, and let the thing die. Now they're saying, oh, the government can't run the postal service. No. Private corporations who imposed themselves on the government stole all the money. That's not the same thing.
And the same thing. We learned that when we made this film, Private Finance or Public Swindle, where they're introducing that same model into the NHS. The headlines always read, government health care system failing, people are dying, whatever. Little do people understand what's happening is that first of all, many of the, even the government, the NHS hospitals, the ones that aren't even partly privatized, most of them are being built or handed over. The building is handed over to these PFI contracts, which then they get first dibs on all income according to the government's contracts with these people in this whole total scam. So all of the money, sometimes like 60-70% of all income into the hospital has to go to these private contractors just for the building, just for the lease on the building.
Yeah.
So that means the income for actual healthcare goes down. So they're doing the same exact thing. And the woman we spoke to at the University of Edinburgh, who's the expert on this, says that you see it in time after time, every single time a PFI hospital, is handed over to this private finance initiative, that the same exact thing, you can predict it with accuracy because the models show, based on the previous data, show what will happen, what they'll do, and they starve it. The headlines in the Daily Mail and other, and Rupert Murdoch press says, the NHS is killing you. Go, bring in all these U.S. health insurance companies, health insurance companies, and they'll save the day.
Look, some things work better managed on a cooperative basis, and some things work better managed on a competitive basis. Obviously, Apple Computer as a competitor in the computer business was doing great, and you wouldn't want the government trying to compete with Apple government using taxpayer money to make computers. However, in the case of things that require huge networks spanning the country, like railway, like office supplies and healthcare, like postal services. Cooperation is economically the most viable way to establish this type of business. And for that, the government is best suited. You don't want, in the UK, they broke up the railway into three or four different sub-constituent parts. So the people maintaining the tracks were different, a different company than the people who were, let's say, creating new services or doing other parts of the business. So they all were competing with each other. So the train that left point A never got to point B. That's because the point A and point B were competing with each other. It doesn't work in that regard. And this is something when in the U.S., in France, for example, they refer to this as a mixed economy, which is the right approach. Some things it's done, the boring network-related, huge bureaucratic necessities are done by the government. That's what they do best. But you see, in the U.S., let me also say that I have nothing against business, but there has to be a firewall between the business interests and the people's interests, the people who are ultimately the customers of the business. You see, business, if you leave business alone, it will commit suicide. And if the government needs to help business and prevent business from killing itself. And in the U.S., the corporations are killing the country. In the U.K., now with austerity measures, they're trying to cut the corporations off from their money supply before they kill the country. That's probably not going to work. In Greece, they're trying to do austerity measures. That's not going to work. In Ireland, the austerity measures to make up for the lack of a firewall between the banks and the people that was obliterated. That's not going to work. So there has to, you can't just simply say that business knows best. It doesn't know best. It only knows best in certain circumstances, which are fine. And there's plenty of things to do, plenty of money to be made, plenty of entrepreneurs to make billions and billions of dollars. But you can't let these same people run everything, because then they're going to kill the very customers they need to survive, and they themselves will be dead.
Well, that's about a perfect time to end this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. And your final words, Max?
Oh, I would say bye, y'all.